And let me just do just a brief rundown of what we did just so everybody's kind of starting at the same level again. The restrooms are in the back. Feel free to use them at any time. There's water and actually coffee tonight. I have several people helping, and it's phenomenal, and they know I'm a big coffee drinker, so I was greeted with coffee. And we also have the water bowls tonight. I'm going to explain a little bit about that because that's kind of a special thing for us tonight. And I'm very grateful for Tim who's done that. It's a little thing, but it's a big thing. So for the two that are here new, is this your very first time to Kadampa Center? Okay. Restrooms are right around the corner. Feel free to use them. This is a very low-key class. We're going to get into some discussion. You didn't miss anything because I'll do a recap. And I'm happy that you made it here. I'm happy that those of you that came back. That's always one of my worries, that we get into it and I scare people away. So we do have the sheet that's right there. Help yourselves to it. It gives a little bit of a background of what we talked about and some of the things that happened here at the center. So a history of the center a little bit. So our plan for tonight. We'll do a brief review to get everybody back on the same page, kind of that general history of Buddhism, a little bit more detailed discussion of the role of the mind. We're going to do some more of that clarification tonight, and then a little bit more of a detailed discussion of the Four Noble Truths. And I really like to get a little bit more class interaction. In the first class, we have to set such a foundation and a little bit of a history, so I feel like it's me just talking. And it's a lot more fun when you guys get engaged. And if you want to move up, feel free. So you're all hiding in the back. But just feel free to participate if you'd like to. Don't worry about it if you don't. Feel free to move around in the class. You know, we are going to be here from 7 to 8:30. Sometimes it's hard just to sit down. Sometimes it's nice as you're learning and trying to try things to come on up if we do a meditation or you want to sit for a while on the cushions and then move back to a chair. It's all good. All right, so just be comfortable. Check it out. You're about checking out what's going on here at the center. Curiosity. A lot of people are here just trying to learn a little bit more about Buddhism. Again, we're not anticipating that anybody here is trying to convert. We're not trying to proselytize. People can come in with their own faiths and spiritualities and learn about this, and that's fine too. If you're interested and want to learn more of this path, we have opportunities for that. So at whatever level and for whatever reason that you are here is good. Again, my name is Sandy. I have been practicing for a very long time, but it's not until I actually came here to the center and was actually to work with Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo and the teachers here that I really felt like my own personal practice just moved, you know, forward so much. Because there's a difference between kind of book learning and experiential knowledge, and that's what I feel like I've achieved here. A lot of you guys, when we talked last week and you introduced yourselves, you talked about having a lot of that book learning or a lot of that kind of outside peripheral knowledge, but coming here and getting kind of what I call the real deal is a phenomenal way to learn more about Buddhism. And we have some phenomenal teachers here. Geshe Gelug Choda, who is our resident teacher, if you have a chance to hear him speak, he literally can change your life for whatever reason that you're here or whatever faith that you come from or spirituality that you come from. He's amazing. And I really try to just keep saying that because he's made such a difference in my life. Just check it out. Check him out. Okay, so before I start, any questions about that come up over the last week? While we were going through some of this again, we were kind of getting through some of the basic, a little bit more factual information. Okay, so let's do just a brief meditation. So what I like to do is start the class with a brief meditation. Not only does it kind of give you a little bit of a foundation of it and a little bit of experience with it, I like to start the class with it. It brings us more to, you know, calm down and kind of forget all those stresses and just chaos of the day. I know I have it, so this is actually as much for my benefit, if not more, than it is for yours. It centers me. And then I like to end the class with a brief meditation again. And what I plan to do is to introduce you to a few different meditations. Okay, if you remember at the first class, we talked about the two different types of meditations from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. One is concentration meditation and the other is analytical meditation. So the concentration meditation is to give your, it's like going to the gym and doing weights so that you can build your muscles to go out and do whatever athletic event that you're doing. Concentration meditation is giving your mind a workout so that when you go into the analytical meditation, you have more focus. So it comes from a very specific reason, a very specific background of why we do it, and it's been practiced this way for 2,500 years. And when you see all of these meditation studies that go on around the world, those scientists pretty much are going to the Tibetan meditators because they're really the ones. So I would challenge you as you're looking at some of that stuff, look and see who they're testing. And the majority of the time it is some of the Tibetan and Buddhist masters, because they're the ones that have really developed these techniques. So my plan is that we'll do a meditation at the beginning of the class, a brief meditation at the end of the class, and I'm going to introduce you to several different concentration type of meditations, so you can experiment with them, try them during the week, and see what works for you. Some are going to work well, some may not. So use what works and throw out what doesn't, and then maybe at the last class. We can go into an analytical meditation, so I can kind of introduce you to that. There's a couple that are really my favorites, and so that's kind of my goal. So it gives you a brief introduction to meditation, and then the beginning class, Meditation 101, for those of you that have not taken that, that's the class that alternates with this class. And so when you're done with this class, if you haven't taken that, that's a nice next step. Or if you've taken both of them, then there's other avenues that you can, if you'd like to move further in the practice. So for right now, let's just go into a brief meditation. I'm going to do, kind of walk you through a specific, again, I'm going to use some of the specific meditations so that you get to practice these. These handouts are on the website. Has anybody gone to the website to download? So if you go to kadampacenter.org, it's written right there, kadampacenter.org, Spiritual practice, I believe, Buddhism in a nutshell, or the beginning practices, Buddhism in a nutshell, find that page, and at the bottom, there are the PDFs of all the handouts that I'm going to be talking about. So if you'd like to try these at home, go print them off and use them as you will. Practice, try them. If you have questions, you know, ask in class the next time around. But right now, let's just do a very brief meditation. If you remember, we're going to go first through the 7-point meditation posture. I actually have to kind of read this because I do it so naturally, I don't even really think about it that much anymore. Again, the reason that we do this posture is no other reason than we're giving a specific solid base so that you can get your body in a position that we can kind of forget about it while we're working with our mind. So if you're sitting on the ground, you can sit cross-legged, lotus position, half lotus, whatever works. If you're sitting in a chair, bring your back up a little bit so you're not slumping, because we're going to try not to do a sleep meditation. But get your feet grounded on the floor, your legs in a stable position. Your back is a little bit in front. And again, I like the back to be what I call a kind of a regal position with the shoulders back. And what we're doing is expanding our lungs. Get your arms loosely in your lap. In this tradition, we do the right hand resting on the palm of our hands and just create a little teardrop with our thumbs. Okay, that is, again, this is about that puts you in a position where your arms are a little bit out from your body, and that allows air to circulate. And so it's just, it's really that simple. For those of you that would be more comfortable, you know, feel free to put your hands on your knees. You'll see in the pictures and stuff, several of you have talked about this, hands in the different mudras. That's a different subject that we can hit more toward the end of this class. But for right now, just hands in your lap, right hand resting in the palm of your left, just slightly below the navel. Shoulders and arms should be relaxed. Your back is very important. It should be straight, but relaxed, fully upright, kind of like your vertebrae is a stack of coins. And it's a little bit easier to think about it so that you're just not slumped, because that would create a feeling of being tired. And if you're stiff, it's too stressful and you can't hold that for any length of time. Your eyes, in the beginning, if you need to meditate with your eyes closed, then that's wonderful. Go there. In this tradition, what we try to do is keep our eyes slightly open and in front of us, but not really looking at anything, a little bit ungazed in front of us. Okay, why? Again, if they're closed, it can create a feeling of being a little bit too tired, easy to fall asleep or drift off. Your mind becomes inattentive. If you keep your eyes wide open, you can become too distracted. So it's just very, very simple to just create a little bit of an opening. Whatever's good, practice, work with it, and see what works for you. Your jaw and your mouth should be relaxed. Your teeth slightly apart, not clenched. Your lips slightly touching. Your tongue should rest lightly on your upper palate with the tip just right behind the back of the upper teeth. Again, why? This reduces the flow of saliva and the need to swallow, because these automatic body actions can be a deterrent and can break your concentration. So again, we're trying to get ourselves in a position that we can be comfortable and forget about our bodies for a little bit. Your head should be slightly inclined forward. That allows your gaze to drop just a little bit in front of you. If your chin is held too high, it's too easy to be distracted. If it's too low, you can have a tendency to be fall asleep. A little bit too mental dullness and sleepiness. So that, again, it's the 7-point meditation posture. Once you've done this enough, you probably can fall into this position very easily without even thinking about it. So I'm going to read the meditation called Scanning the Body. This is handout number 2. And I'm just going to read it so you can just kind of let it go and get yourself in that comfortable position and just let go and listen. Focus your attention on your breathing and just breathe naturally. Become present in the moment and place where you are. Focus your mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle and become calm and present and ready to engage in the meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for this meditation practice. Think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. Again, this is that Mahayana motivation. Focus your attention on your physical body. Find the most suitable sitting position. Okay, we've gotten there. We're in our 7-point posture. Our spine is straight. We're aware and awake, but not stiff or rigid. And right now, focus your attention on the lowermost point of your body, where your body is in contact with the earth or the chair, the cushion. Feel the substance and earthy character of your body. Just concentrate for a moment on that contact, the weight and substance of this physical form. Pay attention to the character of your mind, your consciousness, while we're focusing there. Slowly, mindfully, move your attention upward through your body. Pay close attention to every aspect of your body, the physical sensations. Note any areas of tension and try to work to relax them. Note sensations of coolness or warmth. Note places where one part of your body is touching another. Slowly move upward through your legs and your hips, your hands and your lap. Note the curves of your body's silhouette. Move upward, your belly, your waist, the curve of your arms. Continue to move upward, the rising and falling of your chest with your breath, the curves of your shoulders. Keep moving upward, slowly and mindfully. Pay special attention to your shoulders and neck and jaw. If there's tension there, relax those areas. Move still upward, the tilt of your head, until you reach the crown of your head. Allow your attention to rest at your crown for just a moment. Pay attention to the character of your mind, your consciousness, while focusing here. Is your mind's character different while concentrating here than it was when you were focusing on the lowermost point of your body? What differences can you note? Now slowly move your attention back downward through your body in the same way. Move slowly, mindfully, noting everything about your body as you move your attention back downward. Bring your attention all the way back down to the cushion of the floor where your body is in contact with the earth. And again, focus your concentration at this point and note the character of your consciousness when focusing here. Compare it to when you were focusing at the crown. What's different? And just breathe naturally for a minute. Now we're going to do a dedication. This is kind of a bookend to this effort that we just did. We're going to dedicate the positive energy that we created and any insights that we maybe had to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Again, that may sound a little funny, but if you just try to start thinking that way a little bit, you'll see the mind kind of broadening a little bit, taking the focus off of yourself and onto others. This is part of that Mahayana motivation and Mahayana thought. And bring your attention back to the room. Okay, so we had some people come in. Welcome. Anybody that just came in, is this your first time here? Been here before, first time here? Welcome. Right up here on the stand right there is a little bit of a handout that you're perfectly fine. We're going to do a recap of last week. Welcome. We have water and coffee out there to drink, hot water for tea. Help yourself. Go ahead and bring it in. Just if you spill it, clean it up. The restrooms are right in the back, right around the corner. This is a very conversational, easygoing class. We're going to have discussions, so you didn't miss anything that we can't catch you up on. Okay, so welcome for coming. Thank you for braving the weather. I think we actually have more people here than we did last time. So that's always a pleasure to me. I do worry about that sometimes. Okay, so I have two questions for you, and this is honesty here, okay? Number one, for those of you that were meditating and people were coming in, okay, you don't just think to yourself a little bit, because sometimes people can get irritated or think they get distracted by different things, okay? And you know what? That's part of the practice. Meditation is about concentration, and it's about being able to meditate in the most chaotic place, period. So it's part of the practice, so let it go. When you're meditating and you get distracted and your mind goes away, meditation is actually, the practice is when you bring your mind back. So you're going to get distracted and bring it back. You're going to get distracted, bring it back. You're going to get distracted, bring it back. That's what meditation is. Okay, so it's not being able to sit there and zone out and think nothing. That's actually, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, that's not possible. Okay, the practice is actually to familiarize your mind so that you can control it, so that these distractions become less or further apart, and you can work with your mind the way that you choose to. So to be able to practice and meditate in a subway, in the downtown, you know, Raleigh or Times Square, New York. So it's really interesting when we start working with this to be able to just, you know, don't worry about these distractions because it is, it's all taking place right here. Okay, so question number two. And where's, so Tim's got our mic, because we're going to try, I want to get in the habit of using the mic when we talk. Number one, it will help so that everybody can hear the question. And number two, we do the audio recordings so that people can listen to them and learn. And so it's really, I'm one of them that I like to listen to the audio recordings, and when all of a sudden I can hear fine for whoever's presenting or teaching, and then the question's out there and I have no clue what they said and I've got this big long pause. So let's really try to work on using the mics. Okay, we've got them. Let's use them. Let's pass them around. And to be able to access the teachings online, we'll talk about that toward the end of the class, because that we keep all of the recordings in the members-only area of our website. And the reason is not to keep people out, but there's so much about Buddhism and about these things that can be taken out of context, and we just really don't want to do that. And so it's better if we just make sure that people do have a good foundation and a good context, because once you have access to that, you have access to all of the teachings that we have here at the center. So that reminds me, I'm going to turn mine off, because that would be me. That would absolutely be me. So we'll talk about that toward the end of class, so that if you guys choose to be members and want some more information, I can give you that. Okay, so we did this scanning the body meditation. And I want to ask you how, if you guys noticed anything different about when you were meditating and concentrating on the crown versus thinking about the lower part of your body. Did anybody notice any difference in their mind? We've got one right back there. Cause this is part of it. This is discussion about meditation, because that's what we've got.
Just, I don't know if it's true or not, but when I was focused on here, I seemed a little bit more alert than when I was focusing down there.
Yeah, and it's not true or false. It's what you noticed, okay? And actually, that's very common that people feel lighter or heavier or more aware or. But it's that awareness that you have. Anybody else notice anything? No? Did you guys, when you did it, did you go straight up and down, or did you swirl around? So how did you actually do it? And the reason I'm asking is because the first time I was introduced, for whatever reason, when I do it, I kind of get this spiral thing going. I don't know why. You know, it's like that, I don't, maybe I watched it in a movie or something, that x-ray scan where it goes around. So for when I do this, I've done this meditation often enough that I'm very aware of what my mind is doing. And for some reason, I don't just go down, you know, I swirl. We all have our different ways. There isn't a right way or wrong way, but for some reason, I do this, like, you know, little swirl around my body and go down. And then I actually swirl the other way going up. I don't know why. It's just an awareness I have. I just don't go down and then up. So, question okay? I could probably hear you, but nobody else will.
Yeah. What was the name of that one?
That one is called Scanning the Body, and it's handout number 2.
Oh, I didn't grab the handout.
And no, it's not there. This is online. Oh. So all of the handouts are on our website, and that way, again, what we really, you know, we're going to give you the information, and if you, you know, choose to practice these things during the week, that would be phenomenal. And just check it out, because it's sharing it, and then it's like going into a grocery store or a supermarket. Here's all these aisles, we're going to have it, and you can cherry pick through and see what works. So try these at home. That's why they're there. Pay attention to what's going on with your mind. This is another, what I call a concentration meditation, because we're focusing on the body. So we have an object. Okay, we did a little bit when we did the easy breathing one, where we were focusing on the breath. Again, that's a concentration meditation, because we're focusing on the breath at that one. And again, we're going to do several so that you can see which ones you might be working. It might work for you. Some are going to work very well, and then some you're going to think that's not for me. Okay, so when I go into a meditation session, I have specific concentration meditations that kind of can get me right there. I practice it often enough that I'm going to go right there. I'm going to use that specific tool to get me in a place that I can do an analog meditation with whatever it is that I'm working on at the moment. So this is part of it, because meditation is really about becoming familiar with your mind. Okay. Any questions about any of that? And then we'll try to do another one, a different one, at the end of this class. Okay? So again, I want to do an introduction for you. Okay, so key points from last week. If you remember, again, I'm just going to do a brief review so that we can move on. The history of the Buddha, okay, Prince Siddhartha Gautama, born in the wealthy family. The new people that were here, can I just ask real quick, do you have any history at all or knowledge of Buddhism? A little bit, just a little bit, at least the history, so you know the Buddha a little bit. So we know that the Buddha's life, in the beginning, he was born from a wealthy family. His father was king, and he had a seer come in and give a reading when the Buddha was born, and actually when the prince was born, I should say. This was before he was the Buddha. And the seer told him that he's either going to be a great leader, a great king, or a great spiritual leader. And the king, like any dad, wanted, you know, his son to follow in his footsteps. So he kept him in this very sheltered life and didn't want him to follow that spiritual side, so he didn't give him any of those avenues to go down. So he kept him in this, you know, wonderful cotton wool. All he saw was these beautiful things. And then later in his life, as a young man, in his probably mid-20s or so, he actually snuck out of the castle with one of his servants, and he went out into the land, and he saw four sights. I've got them listed up here. But if you guys remember, what were those things? These are the things that changed the prince's life. He saw a sick person, an old person, a dead body, and a wandering mendicant, a wandering monk. And these things, since he had never seen them, he didn't understand about all of the suffering. What is a sick person? You know, what is old age? You know, he never really was around it. They kept things so beautiful for him that he never saw it. Never saw a dead body. We have probably people that are my age that have never seen a dead body. You know, here in America, we do shelter our children very much, too. It's not like we live in a third world country where you're going to see a lot of things. So I can understand. You know, I try to kind of put things in a perspective that are relevant to the way I live. And so I can understand some of these things because we don't want our children to see a lot of this, so we try to shelter them. And these things really bothered him. And so he decided that he could not continue the life that he was leading, that he really needed to understand this. And so he left the castle, and he became a wandering mendicant. He went to study with several Tibetan, or he went to study, this was in India, he went to study with all of these different spiritual leaders at the time, and he was learning and learning and learning, and he still wasn't finding any of the answers that he was looking for. Why are these things happening? How do we deal with them? And so, literally, he met these other wandering monks, and they tried to study together, and they went to the far extreme. Okay, so instead of all this wealth and abundance that they had, they went to the far extreme of asceticism. Okay, supposedly subsisting on one grain of rice a day and trying to study and work with their minds and meditate. And they went so far. These are those pictures that you see where you can see every single rib and a very gaunt face. And that's depicting the time of the prince's practice. And the story goes that at one point he was laying by the side of the river and was just really realizing that he's so weak from this complete asceticism, I can barely say the word, that it was really conflicting with his studies. And a raft went by with a musician who was playing an instrument, a stringed instrument, and the musician said, "I can't have my string tuned too tight. I can't have it tuned too loose. I need it to be just right, just kind of in the middle, so that it will play music." And he used that as that analogy of, you know what, I can't be on one extreme or the other. This is that middle way. I really have to bring it in. I'm so weak I can't even study. And so there has to be more of a middle way to do this. And so there was a maiden from one of the neighboring villages who fed him and nursed him back to health. And at that point, he decided that he was going to go sit under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, and he was going to look at his mind, and he was going to see what was going on and how he can remove these negativities in his mind and really understand. He needed to look at his mind. And this is what we're talking about. At that point, he went and he sat in Bodh Gaya. He sat underneath that Bodhi tree. And if you've ever just taken that time to just sit and just think about things, and your mind starts to question itself. We start to doubt ourselves. Okay, I think we can all understand that. So he's sitting there, he's looking at his mind, he's doubting himself. In the books, they call it Mara, is throwing all of these negativities about him. You can't do this. You know, you're never going to be able to attain enlightenment. You're not going to understand. So all of these doubts, all of these things are going by. If you saw the Keanu Reeves movie, you know, he's got all of these different things. And it depicts that one point where the Buddha really sat, Prince Siddhartha again at that time, sat, looked at his mind, and was able to overcome all of these doubts, and he was able to see reality and the wisdom of what really happens, and that it depicts in all of the different tankas and things where he actually reached out and touched the ground, calling the earth to witness that I can do this. I can achieve enlightenment. And that's the moment that they say that he achieved enlightenment. Okay, so you see it depicted in the pictures in a lot of the different, these are tankas they call them, where he reached out and he just knew it, and at that moment he achieved enlightenment. So what do we mean? The Buddha actually means enlightened one. He is from the Shakya clan. I want to specify that because Muni means sage. Sage, Muni, interchangeable. He was from the Shakya clan. So Shakya Muni Buddha became his name at that moment. All right. So what do we mean by enlightenment? Okay. Again, we're going to talk about terminology here so that we're all on the same page. Enlightenment, full awakening, removing all obscurations, all negative states of mind, and fully developing all virtuous and positive states of mind. Okay, let's just go here for a minute. That one's not showing up that well. Okay. States of mind. What are some positive states of mind? And go ahead and shout them out. We're not going to worry about a mic for this. Positive states of mind. Love. Okay. What else? Okay. Any more? Okay, we're just going to keep that in mind. If we think of more, negative. Anger, envy, hatred. Is there a you there? Okay. What else? Okay. more. Patience. Let's get patience up there. Humility. Okay. Okay, there's a lot more things that we can put up here, and there's a lot of things that are maybe levels of the same thing, but it kind of gets you to think. Is it possible to look at this list and see the opposites? Okay, so enlightenment, if we remove all obscurations and all negative states of mind, if we could get rid of all of this in our mind, done. We don't think that way anymore. And if we could work on this to develop this to its utmost, that's enlightenment. Okay? And the biggest thing about enlightenment is from the Tibetan Buddhist perspective, and actually from any Buddhist perspective, is that all of us are capable of doing that. Every single one in this room, every single one on this planet is capable of doing this. May not be easy, but we have the Buddha nature. Every single person, no matter what, no matter your background, no matter anything, that's that kernel of truth that we all have the potential to do this. We all have what we call Buddha nature. So, and that's part of the practice. So the Buddha, not being a god, he was a man. Not being a god, not being able to say, I grant you enlightenment, he could not do that. So he did the next best thing. He taught. He said, I did it, you can do it. So kind of try to think about it like Sir Isaac Newton didn't develop, he didn't create the law of gravity, he discovered it. And that's the same thing with the Buddha. He didn't create this, he didn't create enlightenment, he didn't create karma, he didn't create these things, he discovered these. And so if we take it as a working hypothesis that here is a methodology that he used, just like we would when we go to school and we work on gravity and the, you know, theory of relativity, it's that same type of modality, that same type of scientific study, okay? This is the science of the mind. In fact, that's actually one of the definitions that a lot of people use with Buddhism. So he basically gave these large teachings. The first teaching that he gave, they call these the turning of the wheel of Dharma. Okay, and the first teaching that he gave at Bodhnath was the Four Noble Truths, and we're going to kind of use this Four Noble Truths as kind of a foundation to explain some of the things in Buddhism, because the entire path, the entire teaching is in that, the Four Noble Truths. And so it's a good basis for us to kind of work from. It's said that he gave over 84,000 teachings, and they are reflected in our altar with those little boxes up there. They kind of look like boxes. If we pulled that out, we pulled one of those out, those are the teachings of the Buddha. If we pulled those out, we'd open it up and there would be cards with Tibetan written on them, and they're all the different teachings. So I can't read those, and pretty much very few people here at the center can. But we have two Geshe's that are teaching, and so they're giving teachings. So in many ways, it's not, we don't look at it the same way kind of a Western you know, religious type of things done. I mean, you actually see people taking notes. We consider this really more of a school. So he taught for another 40 years after that, and he gave about 84,000 different teachings before his death at the age of 80, and that's when we say he passed into parinirvana, or complete liberation from suffering. Again, he was a man. That was probably one of the biggest teachings that he gave, was just on impermanence and death. So we know that Buddhism started in India, then it went through Sri Lanka. I'm gonna kind of flip back and forth. Okay, so again, we're going through it. The spread of Buddhism, it started in India, spread throughout the East, into Tibet, and all of Buddhism has the same core. Okay, all of Buddhism have the same core, but we have different Buddhist traditions. And a lot of that happened just because of socio-geographic changes, you know, when it is cultural changes, but they all have the same core. There are two main strains, Hinayana and Mahayana. The Tibetan Buddhism is in the Mahayana. The difference is there's not one that's better than the other, but the difference is the Hinayana is more the individual release from suffering, which you hear is Nirvana, and the Mahayana is more of the universal. We're not only thinking about reaching Nirvana ourselves, we're taking it to the next step with enlightenment and the benefit of all beings. But it's just like the swimmer. Okay, you don't dive in the water unless you can swim. So it all goes together. You have to have both. But in Tibetan Buddhism, it really broke into the four different schools, Nyingma, Sakya, Kagyu, and Gelug. And our specific tradition is Gelug. We're a Gelupa tradition. And the Gelupa tradition is headed by the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama is really the spiritual leader of all of the Tibetan Buddhism, but he is in the Gelug tradition. And again, I think I said this at the last class, our teacher, Geshe Gelug, his teacher is Ken Rinpoche, who is the abbot of Sarajay Monastery, and he has a direct line. He was appointed by the Dalai Lama, so it's one of my favorite little things that I like to think that the Dalai Lama actually knows what goes on here at Kanapa Center. Makes me feel good. So, the Buddha is a teacher, turning of the wheel of Dharma. What does Dharma mean? That which protects and holds. Conventional Dharma, we talk about that. These are all the terms you're going to be hearing. Conventional Dharma, you know, we talk about the teachings, but ultimate Dharma is really the realizations that we go through, okay, the actual truths that we see. And Buddhism, all of this is about the mind. All of this is the study of your mind. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, so normally I get asked about this time, well, what is the mind? So we're going to do that one. Let's put this here. Okay, we just went through all that. That's about the center. That's on the sheet. So those of you, I want to get into this stuff. Okay. Buddhism is about the mind. Now, I want to do, again, a clarification. So, developing the positive states of mind, what happens when we develop the what happens? What would happen if we got rid of all that and we only had this? What would that do? How would you feel? What is that? Hello? Well, how would we feel? Enlightenment, but let's just go to basics. Well, how would you feel? If you could get rid of all that, and just have that, how would you feel? Happy. It's that simple. Okay, let's not go too deep here. How would you feel if you could get rid of all of your negative states of mind and develop all of that? Because what are we all looking for? All we want is happiness, right? Everybody in this room, we can all agree, I just want to be happy. We don't have to think any deeper than that. I just want to be happy. I want freedom from suffering. I just want to be happy, right? It's that simple. So developing the positive states of mind leads to happiness, and we move the negative states of mind that cause suffering. Okay? Literally, I'm going to take this word, and I'm going to take this off of here, because this is happiness, is really the big one up here, right? If we have love, if we have compassion, we're happy. If we have all of these things, we're happy. If we don't have any of these things, we're happy. Get rid of these. Give me more of these. Okay? It's we say these things, but I'm really trying to convey the fact that it really is that simple. We make this so difficult, but it's really that simple. It's not easy to do, but it is simple if we would actually think about it that way. So if we do these things, that is enlightenment. Okay? We actually do that, then we're not only happy, we're enlightened. If we could fully develop this and fully do it, then we've reached enlightenment. Okay, so let's work on this. The mind. What is the mind? Okay? From, again, now we're going to get into specifics, the definition of the mind. Remember when I said that Tibetan Buddhism, we have a few different definitions that are different from our Western definitions? Okay, if I was going to ask you guys, what is the mind, what would you say? The brain. That's the way we tend to think. Here's my mind. Okay? From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, the mind is not the brain. The brain is a physical part of this body. But your mind is something completely different. In a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, the definition of the mind, mind and consciousness can kind of be used a little interchangeably here. So the mind, in a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, is non-physical. It is not the brain. It is clear. So you can kind of, like a clear sky or a clear lake or a mirror that just reflects. It is aware. So it has sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, plus a mental awareness. Okay? A mental awareness. They're adding that to our five senses that we think of from a Western perspective, the five senses. Add mental awareness to that. Its function is to know. That's what its job is, to know. It has no beginning and no end. So that one, we're going to kind of skip over that because we'll get that in later classes. It has no beginning. This stream of consciousness has no beginning and no end. Think of it as a stream of consciousness. So literally, picture that river in your head. And that is your mind consciousness. It has no beginning, no end, and is constantly changing. They say that you actually have, I think it's 65 mind moments, 67, in a single, 64? Okay, in a single, 64 mind moments. Your mind is so powerful, boom, you've gone through all these processes, boom, just like that. So, again, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, your mind is a stream of consciousness. It goes through these moments, mental moments, okay? And so this is that thought process. So let me try to walk you through this. What did you have for breakfast? Nothing. What did you have for dinner last night? Okay, what did you have for lunch yesterday? So you see how you can follow your food back. Just pick a subject and follow it back and see how far back you can get. That's your stream of consciousness. So you're trying to kind of walk it back. Think about it like that. We tend to parse things up into time, but if you kind of follow your mind back, okay, and you can follow it forward. So it has no beginning and no end. Clear sky. It is clear. You have the choice of what you put in there. Think about this, and there's a meditation we're going to do later. So you have this clear mind, and think about thoughts like clouds, okay, that go through. So you've got this clear mind, and a thought is a cloud, and you can choose to follow that cloud or just let it pass through. And so it kind of gives you that idea of it's what you choose to put in there, okay, a mirror that just reflects things. So you can look at that. If I'm thinking about love, I'm probably going to have a warmer demeanor because I'm reflecting my thought. So it's just kind of thinking. Again, I'm just going to start to try to plant what I call plant some seeds. Okay? We're not going to understand this. You're not going to become enlightened in this class. We're not going to be, you know, deep diving, and you're not going to understand everything. I just want to see if I can just get a little bit of an awareness and put your foot, you know, a little bit on this rung to understanding a little bit more. So it's, again, you're not going to understand. We're going to come around at these things, you know, 52 times because we're going to talk about them in different ways. But it's kind of that understanding of, let's get this concept of the mind down. Okay. Please, Mike.
So in this case, when you're defining the mind, how does that roll in with memories? I mean, is the mind a summation of memories, or is there something above that?
There's there's something about that. Memories are definitely a element of the mind, okay? But it's, so they are an aspect of the mind, okay? But it's more than that. That's just a piece. A memory is a piece. It's a mind moment. It's a mental moment. Okay, so it's a snapshot of a mental moment. Does that help? Anybody have anything further to say about that? Memory?
That part of the dream in reverse.
Mm-hmm, because that's from the past. So, yep, this is the stream's going this way, but to be able to have that memory so you remember that mental moment from last night's dinner, the mental moment from yesterday's breakfast, or, you know, an argument at the office, or, you know, a soccer game for your kid, mental moment. It's a piece. So it's kind of like taking a snapshot of that stream right at that moment. Make sense? Would you change any of that? I have some people that have been practicing for a while. So I don't have any ringers in the class. I had that happen last time to me, but some of our other students and practitioners are here, and that's always nice for me. Okay, so there is mind and consciousness are can be used interchangeably, but again, the distinction is made that the mind is not the brain. The brain is physical. The mind is non-physical. The mind's qualities are clearness and awareness. Its function is to know. The mind does not possess awareness. It is awareness. Okay? And Buddhism describes six types of awareness, just like we do, with sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, add mental. Yes, ma'am?
So in Western thought, we have the concept of soul.
Uh-huh.
Is our soul in the mind something similar or something different?
It's something different. Okay, so I'm going to touch on this a little bit, but there will be more coming up to this. So again, I'm just going to touch on it because this is something that we will talk about in more depth later. Okay, so from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, when we're talking about the mind, we're talking about karma, we talk about rebirthing, and we'll touch on this more later. When you think of a soul, what do you... Give her back that mic. I'm not done with her yet. Okay, so what is your definition of a soul? What is it, from your thinking, what is your definition of the soul?
It's what makes me a human being. How I confront the world. And
do animals have souls?
Yes. I think so.
Okay, so... So your definition of what makes you a human, is that what makes
you? Well, it makes me a sentient being, I guess.
A sentient being,
yeah.
Okay. So would you say that the soul is something that is unique to just you? And I'm asking, there isn't a right or wrong. Okay, I'm just trying to gauge.
Yes, that each person has a particular soul.
Okay. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, they don't really go down the path of a soul, and the reason why is that since we believe in a mind stream and in rebirth, which is a little bit different than the concept of reincarnation, again, we will go through this a little bit more deeper later, but I want to answer your question tonight, because the soul is really particular to this one being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one being. In Buddhism, this one being is there isn't a this one being. Okay, so the deeper way that I would probably explain some of this, and there's a great I should have brought it. There's a great description in The Art of Happiness where the Dalai Lama really explains that to him the mind and consciousness have this element of heart to them, heart and mind together. So it's not just this mind that is kind of this clinical type of thing that I think that we kind of put on it with our interpretation and our Western thing. He's got, again, I'll see if I can find it and try to remember to do this for the next class, but he's got this really great explanation in this book, The Art of Happiness, where he talks about the mind as being heart and mind together. so that the emotion and the love and the compassion are part of this description of what the mind is from a Buddhist perspective. And so that, I found that helped me when I was kind of trying to work through this whole soul thing and what's going on. And again, this now is from Sandy, that that's part of why this works for me, is the fact that I kind of think of myself as the keeper of this mind, and I want to do the best thing possible for this mind. I'm very appreciative of who kept this mind last time. It's kind of like the environmental thing that, you know, we want to keep the earth good for our, you know, grandchildren and our children's children. I kind of look at it that way. So that it gives that element of, you know what, I can do this because there's time. And when Sandy's got a lot of faults, man. You know, I am so not a perfect person, and I'm working on it. But the fact that I know that I can, I find very helpful that I'm not laden with all of these guilt and issues and this individual weight. So I find a freedom in it. But there is a difference between this individual soul from the Western perspective and this mind heart from the Buddhist perspective and from the Dalai Lama specifically. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. I love the questions, guys. It helps to think about it. So again, the mind is constantly changing, and here's the kicker. We can control the change. We can control the change. We can control our minds. That's part of this practice. We can control our minds. We have the ability to improve our own minds and create our own happiness and the causes of our happiness. It's not necessarily easy, but it is doable. So, how? How do we do it? Again, I want to familiarize you with some of these terms. The Lam Rim is a book where they pulled all of the teachings of the Buddha together. It's an organization. It's the original Buddhism for Dummies. The Lam Rim is the original Buddhism for Dummies. Okay? It is an organization of all the Buddhist teachings, and it was written by Lama Atisha, and it's the lamp on the path to enlightenment, and that's basically what we study here at the center, and it is a step-by-step, you know, it's a graduated path. Do this, then do this, and do this, then do this. It's just like going to college, going to high school, going to college, going to grad school, going to master's. So you just do this. And it is said if you can follow this, that you have the opportunity to reach enlightenment. Okay? It's a simple process. It's not easy. It is a simple process. It's not easy. What questions right now? Anything you're asking them, I want to make sure we've got it. Yes. The mind transfers. And again, we'll talk about that more. So her question was, she said, the soul then doesn't transfer. Does the mind? And I said yes. And again, we're jumping ahead about three classes. That's more what we get to toward the last two classes. But that is what the mind stream is, that there's a little very subtle piece of your mind, and that's what is reborn. And we'll get into much more of this once we understand some things a little bit better, because it's a better basis. Okay? Okay, so let's go back to our Four Noble Truths so that we can figure out what is all that suffering. Again, this always cracks me up because Buddhists are the happiest people I know. So again, positive states of mind, negative states of mind, the Four Noble Truths. What was that word we used? Remember when I said I want you to think of suffering with a different word because, nope. It was a Tibetan or Sanskrit word, because we just put these we hear the word suffering and we automatically think of a specific type of suffering. So I'm trying to take you to a larger thought when you think of this. Dukkha. Okay. I'm giving you this word because it will help you to kind of think of suffering a little bit differently when you see this word. Because when you see this word, we automatically kind of think of the pain and the ow, okay, the suffering of pain. When we hear suffering, that's kind of what we think about, right? The suffering of pain. And remember I told you, Tibetan Buddhists have lists. Everything is a list. We have lists for lists. So the truth of suffering is that there's a suffering of pain. This is the ow. This is things go wrong, you get hurt, whether it's an accident or, it's kind of that stuff that we tend to think of when we think of suffering. The ouch. Okay? The suffering of change. We tend to hold on to things. You talked about attachment and non-attachment. We're going to get into some of that later. That specifically is going to go here because the suffering of change. Things change. I got this brand new car, and I just got a big scratch in it. It changed. Now I'm, so you're up and down. I'm too hot, so I turned the air conditioner on. Now I'm too cold. So it's always that change. We get attached to things, and we don't want them to change. And everything in this world is impermanent and is going to change. So we have to start to look at that and recognize that. Pervasive suffering. Okay, this can be described several different ways. It's that some people can even call it the suffering of getting what you want. There's a big, long, convoluted way to explain that. Just that general dissatisfaction. Just because we live in this world, and we have birth, death, illness, the whole cycle of life, just because we live here and this is the stuff that we go through, there's kind of that pervasive unease. It's one of the reasons you guys are here, that you have a general dissatisfaction you're seeking, right? That's that general pervasive thing that just goes through everything. So all of this is the truth of suffering. There is suffering, okay? The truth of the cause of suffering. So again, we're going to go to... Think about it like this. This is that, the 12-step program. Admit you're sick. Admit you are sick. And then figure out why. Go through the causes. Figure out why you're sick. This is kind of that doctor thing. Okay. Figure out, can it be cured? And then take the medicine. Okay? So it's literally, again, it's that simple. I'm going to admit that I'm sick, so I'm going to try to go to the doctor and figure out what's going on. You go to the doctor, and you figure out what's causing it. He prescribes the medicine, and then you got to take the medicine. It doesn't do any good to get the prescription and have it sit on your counter. You have to take it. So it's kind of putting that in, 20th century terms. So that we know how to do it and we know how to start to identify it in our own lives. So what are, again, now we're going to go into another list. So the cause of suffering, of all the various mental afflictions, as well as the actions of body, speech, and mind, we're going to get into some of these terminologies, arising from the mental afflictions, karma, we're going to talk about karma a little bit deeper in the next class, we have six root afflictions, and you guys actually said quite a few of them, okay? Anger. You said them in a different way, though. I was trying to get you to go. So anger, attachment, which is kind of a few of these things. So attachment, we're going to describe that, too, because I want to make sure that you understand that there's a different meaning to attachment that we had for... Okay, pride is in here. We kind of called that ego. The kind of different, but kind of the same, pride. Okay, doubt, which can be a combination of these things. Doubt, these are the main. I'm going to write these out so you can see them. Pride, anger, ignorance. We didn't say ignorance, did we? Nothing there. Ignorance. Okay, major affliction. You just don't know. Sometimes you don't know that you don't know, and sometimes there is a what I'm going to call a purposeful ignorance. and Americans especially can do willing or purposeful ignorance. We don't want to know. Ignorance, anger, attachment, pride, doubt, and wrong view. And that's kind of, again, that purposeful ignorance, intentional ignorance. You do know, but you're ignoring it. And we do that all the time. We do that all the time. How many of us are, you know, you see all these icky things on the news, you know what? Don't want to watch it. So we turn the channel and we're watching The Voice, you know? So we all do it. Okay, you see it in school, I don't want to know. You know that it's there, you're choosing to turn away for whatever reason. Sometimes it's your own mind protection, I know I tend to do that. You know, you feel helpless, whatever reason, we don't want to know. So that's kind of that type of thing. Yeah, I get better off if I don't try to follow these things. Okay, so your list for your list. The truth of suffering, we've got this. Truth of the cause, figure out why. Okay, so now let's look at some of these. How much time do I have? I start running out. What questions do you have? I'd rather listen to questions and try to answer than just continue to talk. But if that's... So quiet. Okay. Do you see the opposites on some of these? How many people... Here was an awareness that I had. I don't think of myself as an angry person. I really don't. I'm pretty good. You know, I can get mad. I can get frustrated. But I don't think of myself as angry. All right? You hear all these classes, anger management, all of this kind of stuff. So I really didn't look at that as being one of my issues until I realized that anger is relative. And anger has a ramp. And you start off, I am and can be an impatient person. Impatience is a form of anger. So this is one I think everybody in this room can work on because we just tend not to think about it. So we're busy, we have to go someplace, even driving in the car, okay? Even driving in the car. Let's do one little practice. We're driving in the car and we're at a red light. How many of us really like to sit at red lights? Drives me nuts. I saw a red light and it was instant negative mind. That, anytime. I'm actually looking. I can see that yellow light coming, and I know it's. I'm in angry mind 2 minutes before I even get there, and I'm counting cars. Okay, is he going to make it as well? Okay, that's negative mind. It's negative mind, and that's impatient. Okay, so that's where I go. And now, if I'm late for a meeting, oh, now we're going to add stress on top of this negative mind, and all of a sudden I've got 4 minutes at that flipping light. Where I'm in negative mind, right? Now I think, how can I change this? Because this is, here's this, we're going to talk about just simple things because if we can do the simple things, we can't work on the hard stuff until we even know how to work on the simple things, right? So let's just do red lights for a minute. Negative mind. So that was a shocker to me when I realized, because I'm irritated and I'm angry that that car in front of me didn't go, so now I'm mad at somebody. Now, I'm not the kind that flips anybody off or does any of that, but, you know, I'm not happy. So I had to look at this and think, wow, here's a very simple thing that happens every single day of my life, probably 5 or 6 times a day because I'm on the road a lot, and I'm negative mind on the road 5 or 6 times during the day, every day, over something as simple as a red light. That's impatience, which is a form of anger. So I'm aware that I now have a negative mind. I can identify it. So now I'm going to work on that. I started this practice about 2 years ago. Okay, again, it's identifying. I'm working with my mind. Y'all can work on your minds. I'll tell you how I need to work on mine. So I have impatience. I'm sitting at a red light. I recognize this now. And I'm just going to take one piece of my life. I'm going to go, you know what? That's crazy. I'm mad because I'm at a red light. So now what I do, because I am a practicing Buddhist, that I use that red light to say some prayers now. I have actually been doing this long enough that I'm trying to whip through these prayers. I'm going, no, don't turn. So I can sit at a red light and hope it stays so I can finish my prayer. How weird is that? But now I don't look at a red light as a negative thing. So I'm going to give you a practice. For the next class, I want you to try this. Okay? How many of you have ever been at a red light and go, oh, good, I'm so happy you get to go. Yay, oh, yeah, have a nice day. You can go. You know, I rejoice that you have a green light while I'm sitting here at a red light. Just even for a joke, try it. Oh, yay, you get to go. I'm so happy your car in front of me stopped so that you're safe. That you didn't run that yellow so I could make the yellow. I rejoice for you. Turn it. And just try every single red light. I want you to think of some way to be happy that you're sitting at a red. Just try it. The very awareness that you have a negative mind because of that red light, is going to be just an awakening for you. Oh, yay. So, you know, you're not practicing Buddhist, so think of something good to think about while you're sitting at that red light. I don't care what it is. I love my mother. I love my wife. I love my kid. Think of a positive thing. It doesn't matter. Something is going to work for you. And I'm dying to hear you guys come back next week and say, I tried it. So every red light, give it a shot. But that is, again, so I take all of these little mini moments where I'm trying to work on these different things, and I use it as a trigger to be aware of my mind during the day. And I have lots of these because I'm trying to practice all the time. Once you start looking at your mind and you start catching these things and you start being able to figure out these things and figure out what your triggers are, what's your trigger for anger, what's your trigger? Impatience at the grocery store. I'm in line, I'm in a hurry, my ice cream's melting, whatever. You know, where's those cashiers? What makes you impatient? So just be aware of your mind this week and think that's a negative mind. Go through it. Am I impatient right now? Am I angry right now? Something at work. We're going to start working on some of these things. That you're working with your mind. Okay? So, questions. Is this kind of making a little sense? Okay, so just we're going to start to pick these things apart so that you can start figuring out, wow, class goes fast. Does it go as fast for you guys as it does for me? Or is it just me? So what does it mean to be a Buddhist? How many times do we say, wow, I had a good day today. I had a good day today. Something happened at work. I got a raise at work. I got flowers. Something happened that made me happy. Something out there happened in my life that made me happy. How many times do we blame something out there for making me unhappy? Oh, Frank came back from the office and he had this thing and now I got to do all this work. Frank made me unhappy. Okay. How many times do we blame something out there for our unhappiness or that we look out there for something that makes us happy? That's probably what most of us do. Wouldn't you say? Are we looking out there? He made me happy. She made me happy. He made me unhappy. It made me happy. It's all out there, right? We're blaming everybody. And we're also giving the credit to everybody else, too. Right? It goes both ways. Being a Buddhist means that we're not looking out there for our happiness, and we're not looking out there for the cause of our suffering. It's not out there. It's in here. And so we turn inward to look. You see this happen all the time. If happiness was out there, I would say most of the stars in Hollywood should be delirious, right? They got fame, they got money, they got nice houses. They should be happy. What are the things that we think make us happy out there? Would you think that most of those people would be happy? Well, it's quite obvious by all of those magazines you see at the grocery stores that a lot of them aren't happy. Okay, what about the people that we think should be unhappy? Those of us that have been dealing with cancer, those of us that are sick, those people that are suffering with things. If the happiness was out there, then not a single person that is dealing with those kind of things should be happy at all. Okay? But the people that I see that don't have things, okay, there's a lot of people in third world countries and a lot of people right here in the U.S., they don't have a lot of stuff, but they're happy. They shouldn't be. Why should they be happy? They don't have things. Or they're sick. You know, when I was going through cancer, I had a lot of these thoughts. I was trying to deal with some things, and it was like I made the decision, you know what? That's out there. I still can be happy even though I have this stuff going on. I choose. I make the choice. I work on it. Does it mean that life is easy? No. Does it mean that it's all a bed of roses and that you can ignore these awful things that are happening? No, it doesn't. How you choose to deal with it, you have the power. Okay, if happiness was truly out there, it would be easy enough to just go through and figure out, wouldn't it? Well, I need more money. That's going to make me happy. Well, there's a lot of people that have a lot of money and they're not happy. I need good health. Well, there's a lot of people that don't have good health, but they're happy. Okay, there's a lot of unhappy people out there that have things that we want. They're not happy. So it's not looking out there. It's looking in here. That's what it means to be Buddhist. Make sense? Thoughts? Question? Mike? Tim? This is Tim.
All right, so I could be completely off base here, but is there a place in this Buddhism that part of the mind or finding happiness is accepting what you can't control?
Absolutely. Very big part.
That's what I'm seeing in a lot of what you're saying.
Yep.
My mind is going there.
It's a very big part. So the Buddha actually has, and Geshe-la says this a lot, and I actually have it written all over the place because I'm a little bit of a control freak. I try to, you know, I want everything to be as perfect as I can get it. If there is something, so we've got some kind of a stress out there, we've got something happen. Is there something you can do about it? Then do it. If there's nothing you can do about it, worrying is not going to help. Let it go. Can you do something? Then do it. If you can't, if it's beyond your control, then let it go. Because what is worry going to get you? Now, finding that line is a little hard sometimes, and that's part of my struggle in my practice, because I'm going to constantly try to fix, and then sometimes, you know what? I have to let it go. If I can do it, and I will think this. I actually think these words, can I do something? That's bothering me. And then I'll go through, can I do something about it? And this is where meditation, that's actually part of an analytical meditation. This is the ability to work with your mind. Well, I'm bothered by this. This is really bugging me. Well, sit down. Sit down with it and think, can I do something about it? What can I do? What's the wisdom? What's the wise thing or the compassionate thing? Because, again, you've got to do both. Can I do about it? What should I do about it? So think it through and then do it. And then if you realize that you can't, then that gives you a little bit of that peace of mind. Well, but it's that awareness. Yeah, it is about letting go. So, okay, so I want to do one more word here. I'm trying to watch this. So as we're talking about letting go and we talk about the word attachment, and the word detachment, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, again, this is one of those words where in America, well, I'm very attached to that. I'm very attached to my husband. I'm very attached. We use that word attached as a positive, don't we? Okay? So when we say detachment, we kind of look on that as a negative, and you hear this with some of the things you might have heard in Buddhism, detachment, well, as then all of a sudden you think that that means not care. Right? So far from the truth. Okay? So let's work on the definition of attachment and detachment. Attachment from, again, and I'll get all the definitions because I'm jumping ahead a little bit. So we are attached. You know what? I'm going to back up even further. What is the definition of love? Let's find a definition for the word love. What's a definition that we can all agree on? I have one in my head, so let's see where you come. What's the definition of love? Can we all agree that the definition of love is the wish that that person be happy? Okay? The wish for someone to be happy. To be happy, right? I love that person. I love you. I want you to be happy. Because we're putting happiness way up here. So can we all agree that that may be at least for a starting point? I love you. I want you to be happy. That's what that means. I want you to be happy. I don't want you to have any problems. I want you to be happy, period. Compassion. What would be a good definition for compassion? The wish that that being not suffer. The wish that that human, that animal, that being not suffer. You can have self-compassion. I don't want to suffer anymore. Compassion. The wish that that person be free from suffering. Okay? Right? Okay. So now, I'll do it really quick, and then we'll go into it more depth. So attachment, from a Western point of view, we look at that as kind of a good word. I'm attached. I love that person. I'm very attached to them. Attachment, I love him because he makes me happy. Attachment is all about me and not Joey. I love Joey. Joey makes me happy. Okay? Joey does something wrong, I'm not happy anymore, and now I don't love him. So who's that love about? Is that about Joey? It's about me. So attachment with the Buddhist perspective is putting your own, this is about me, it's not about that person. Okay, so to be detached does not mean not caring. It means I truly want Joey to be happy, even if it means he's not with me. I want him to be happy no matter what. There are no strings attached to that. Okay? So detached means take those strings off. It does not mean you don't care. Okay? Because when you love somebody, if you love somebody purely, totally, completely, you want that person to be happy no matter what. And it doesn't mean that because they make you happy. Make sense? We'll go into it in more detail. But just to cover some of these, because we're going to be talking about these big concepts. Questions? Y'all so quiet. Bored, sleeping. Okay, it is already almost time for class to be done. I really want to kind of walk through some of these meditations so you can try it. So, the takeaway for tonight, try the stoplight thing. Okay, just see, just for stoplights for this week. Okay, just stoplights. As you might, I guarantee the first time you actually think about this, because you're going to forget all about this until one time at a stoplight, you're going to start laughing. And you're going to go, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be practicing. So all of a sudden, you're going to go into it. So that's an awareness. Boom, it came. Okay? So sometime, I guarantee you, this week, somebody's going to sit at a stoplight, and you're going to think of me, and you're going to start laughing. But that's the practice, the awareness. Okay? So this week, your takeaway, sit at a stoplight. Try not to have a negative mind. Try to be happy that everybody else is going in front of you, and try to think a positive thought. If you've got a special prayer you like, or if you just, you know, want to think about something that makes you happy, try it. All right, I want to try one brief meditation. Let's see, what did we do? Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do one of the ones that, it's called Counting the Breaths. This is going to be handout number 3. This is actually one of my favorite ones because I've done it so much that I do it automatically, and it's a very good concentration meditation. And again, I want to just kind of put some things in your mind, and you can try it again. This is on the website. You can download it. So let's just take a few minutes counting the breaths. Go through. Get yourself comfortable. We've done the 7-point meditation posture. I'm not gonna walk us through it. I want you to just kind of go through it in your head. So take a deep breath. Kind of bring it down again. You know, let all of these things and all the things I've said tonight just kind of swirl and settle. You can think about them later. Let it all go. and focus your attention on your breathing, and just breathe naturally. Focus the mind on the rise and fall of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle and become calm, present, and ready to engage in the meditation. And again, we're going to set a motivation. Create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session. Think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate, develop your mind, to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. Start by focusing your attention at the opening of the nostrils. Pay attention to the very subtle sensations as you breathe in and out through your nose. You can feel certain sensations as the air passes, as the small hairs move, cooler sensations as you inhale, warmer as you exhale. Don't follow the air all the way into your body or out into the surrounding environment. Just place your attention on the sensation associated with the breath at the opening of your nostrils. And your job is to keep your attention firmly placed on those sensations. As you inhale and exhale, mentally count each inhalation and exhalation together as one. We're going to count from 1 to 10, concentrating on those sensations. When you reach 10, begin again at 1. If you become distracted, if your mind wanders to other things and moves away from the point of concentration, begin again at 1. If you get to 4 and all of a sudden notice your mind someplace else, start at 1. Even if you never get past 2, it's not a problem. The point is to train your mind to focus on one point only. This concentration does take some practice, but just start working on it. Now I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to give you just a couple of minutes to just count from 1 to 10. Breathe in. Breathe out, that's 1. Breathe in, breathe out, that's 2. Count to 10, start over. Let's just see what you do. Bring your attention back to the room, and let's dedicate this positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Okay, now a show of hands. And I'll tell you that there have been times that I do this even now, and I've been doing this one for years, and even now I can sit down to do my meditation and do this and think I'm going to go to 10, start over. I'll find myself on 82. And it's like, whoa, I need to bring it back. I found myself on 5 and had to do it. How many even got to 10 or had to restart? How many had to restart? Okay. How many actually think, I wonder how long she's going to go? What is that bell? How long are we doing? It feels like forever. So you're thinking about me. When is she going to ring it? How long has it been? Okay. I've been, there's some videos out there and they crack me up. I have actually been sitting in a meditation and been decorating my meditation room. So it's what we do. So the purpose of meditation is to learn to control your mind, and you are meditating if your mind goes away and you bring it back. That's what meditation is, familiarizing yourself with it and constantly bringing your mind back. I'm all the way over here, I'm thinking about, no, let it go, breath, one, two, three. Oh, I like that green color, one, two, three. My cat comes in. I have to start over. Okay, get comfortable, yeah. It's the practice is to just continue to work on it. Honestly, if you sit there for 5 minutes, that's all you need to do. So we'll start talking a little bit about setting up a meditation practice, but it don't sit there and think you're going to make a half an hour meditation session the first few times you try it. Do not get upset. Try these things. Sit with it for a few minutes. If you do it, you know, for 5 minutes, you're good. Another thing that I had to do, and then I'm going to stop because you guys got to go, a timer. I found myself so worried about time that it was bothering me. It would be because I'd be constantly, how long has it been? Oh. How long has it been? Oh. I found myself so worried about time that it was bothering my meditation. So there's a meditation timers. There's apps for that, and I use them. Because then I know, you know what, because I've got 10 minutes. I'm going to do 10 minutes. I'll set my timer for 10 minutes. Then I can let go of it and I can concentrate because, I've got work to do. I've got something to do. So there's apps for that, right? So find out what's going on in your head, why, and remove the obstacles, okay? But do the red light thing. See if you can do even a 5-minute meditation. We've done 3 of them now. We've done scanning the body. We did counting the breaths. And we did, there's another one that was just on just the breathing and being aware. Find that we've done 3. Download them. Try to do 1 of them every day. 5 minutes. Just try 5 minutes. Okay? Thank you all for coming. I'm glad we survived the storm. If you have any questions, there's my email, sandy@blueyonder.tv. Some of you are emailing me. That's great. Whatever I can do to help. Thank you so much. Drive safe. Home.